Well, I feel a bit sad, more so because we lost. I have a lot of happy memories here, you know. I don't think really I can take it in that I'll not be playing here again.
It's up for grabs now! Thomas! Right at the end!
Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again! So watch it! Drink it in!
Welcome everybody to the Final Countdown, a podcast looking back at great finals within the game of football. I'm Lewis, here with my co-host Adam.
Hello.
And we have convened for an emergency pod, as many people, if not everyone, in the realm of football and sports would know. We lost a giant in Sir Bobby Charlton recently. So we thought it'd be a good excuse to use the final days kind of umbrella to cover the life and ability of Sir Bobby Charlton.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're going to do our best, but that would take a lot longer than...
Yeah, that's true. This is not a deep, in-depth dive. I'm sure there's lots of resources available for that.
Paying homage to a true giant.
Yeah, a celebration of probably the first ever English superstar. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, certainly as I grew up, it was the name.
Because you had... There was an element, and this isn't meant to besmirch the great name of Bobby Moore, but... There was something about Charlton that was, maybe because he was an attacking player rather than a defender, but there was something about Bobby Charlton and he became kind of a figurehead. Whereas Bobby Moore is a saint to England players, I feel like Bobby Charlton around the world is more revered. Is that a statement?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I mean, Bobby Moore largely, I think, would have, from a football point of view, would have been lauded for the 66 triumph alone. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think, certainly talking to people that are a bit older than me, Charlton's story, which we've covered a little bit before with the Munich air disaster, right, and then the kind of redemptive 10 years of that with the 66 World Cup in the middle of that, I think. And also just the way he was.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe not just British people, but I think people love a hero that turns out to be a hero.
Yeah, he was always classy, no scandal.
Yeah.
He was like the statesman for English football, wasn't he?
Exactly that, yeah. I think that's a really good way of putting it. He represented, I think, everything we would want our superstar heroes to be.
Yeah, and there was a dignity, even with him continuing to attend Man United games for as long as he did. That sense of kind of... It almost probably quite unhelpful if you're, I don't know, Ralph Rangnick at Man United having the spectre of Bobby Charlton just being like Charlton, who again never came out and criticised the club, wasn't one to give a quote to kind of make bad times worse at United. He just kind of, like you say, had that statesman like, I'm here, I'm a little bit of consistency in these turbulent times.
Yeah.
But yeah, so really the aim of this podcast is just to celebrate Bobby Charlton. So I'm certain that everybody knows, but for a long time was England's record goal scorer.
He was, Lineker ran him close, but ultimately missed a penalty against Brazil and didn't get there. That's so right. Charlton was until Rooney, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right, yeah, Rooney.
A long time.
Soon Harry Kane is going to be overtaking.
I think he has.
Has overtaken.
Yeah,
sorry,
he's got
60 right.
now, isn't he? Right, Kane? Yeah, as of last week, yeah. So Charlton got 49 for the record.
For the record, made the record show.
Made the record
so
show.
I'm just going to note that down now on the record.
Which is phenomenal, really, because he wasn't an out-and-out striker.
No, not at all, no.
Which is like even more
midfielder.
Impressive, yeah.
And again, even in, to just to take a sidetrack to some tactics talk, which we always know.
Of course you do, mate.
Any excuse.
You mentioned Ronaldo, I'm turning up.
No, but if you are following us on Twitter, I'm just trying to sneak in as much Ronaldo content as possible for Adam takes away the password.
Day, yeah. I have nothing to do with that.
But yeah, Bobby Charlton was kind of a bit of a free roll before there was much of a free roll.
Yeah.
Like the 6-6 final was a good example where you had, you know, Nobby Styles who holds at the base of midfield and he stays there the entire game. Mm. He is just that anchor man in midfield. But Charlton was allowed to go wherever he needed. He had that football intelligence. And also, like, obviously a lot gets made of his long range shooting. But when you think about the footballs and how much they soaked up water, that must have been like kicking a boulder 30 yards.
Yeah,
it's
a lot,
unreal.
Yeah, a few people have commented on that actually. I saw a, I think it was a Jeffrey Boycott quote on Twitter, kind of paying homage to Charlton. He was saying about the fact that the way that Charlton kicked those footballs kind of would piss all over today's.
You imagine you take the leather off
them,
wouldn't they?
It's just ridiculous. So, yeah, it's very difficult to watch that footage back and get in your mind that that is a completely different feat when he's hitting it from 30 yards.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a different level. The kind of the ball technology didn't change until into the 70s.
That's right.
So yeah, these certainly in the era he was playing in, like early 60s into the later in that decade, it was massively heavy leather football. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
It is crazy. So he was a scorer of goals. A fact that I found out post his death that I didn't realise, he's not far from Lineker in terms of, do you know how many times he got booked in his career?
Oh, really?
Twice as a midfielder.
It kind of fits mine.
That's crazy.
I guess they were both for tackles. Can't imagine it was...
No, it wouldn't have been descent. Not no. Sir Bobby. No. Yeah, absolutely amazing, though, isn't it? Twice as a midfielder in a career spanning decades to only get booked twice, I thought was an incredible feat.
Yeah, so absolutely, that really surprised me. I mean, Harry Lineker never got booked for shitting on the pitch. I don't
know. He should have been sent off.
Can you imagine that?
What would that go under? Unprofessional conduct?
Decent exposure. Gary, you're out of here.
Conduct unbecoming of a footballer, of an England great. But talking about England greats, everyone would know, obviously, that Bobby Charlton was brothers with Jack Charlton, who I found out from Jack Charlton that he applied to be a policeman, and then he applied for another job, I've forgotten, and then basically as his third choice went, oh, I'll become a footballer then. But imagine, like...
Different level.
Yeah, imagine those, like, brothers having a kickabout in the back garden, whereas...
So he was an older brother, wasn't he, Jack Charlton?
Yeah, that's right.
So
yeah.
I think this was on the little... tribute thing that Sky Sports did, but I didn't know this, that Bobby Charlton said that one of his biggest regrets, if not one of his only regrets, is that him and Jack Charlton fell out after their mother died.
Is that right?
Yeah, in the kind of mid to late 90s. And so if you watch back, and I love this kind of like poignant stuff behind the actual thing, when Jack Charlton was brought out by the BBC to present Bobby with his Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah.
That was very early on in the thawing process of their relationship. So Bobby Charlton's emotion, if you watch him, is a lot to do with the fact that...
It's his brother giving him the award.
But his speech, Jack Charlton's speech, is unbelievably touching.
Is it? I need to go and watch that.
He's like, you know, he's my brother, he's the best player I've ever seen. It's like, rip your heart out stuff anyway.
Yeah.
But once you know the context of the fact that they had a very frosty relationship following the death of their mother, up until that point.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't know that, any of that. So
I dug into
that yesterday.
When we were kids and we used to go to the park and play, I would go home for dinner and he'd stay on all day. Bobby Charlton is the greatest player I've ever seen. Isn't he, brother?
Yeah, until that. They played on different teams, for those who don't remember. Jack and Jack played Leeds, didn't he?
Yeah.
And Bobby obviously went to United, so they never... Other than England, never played on the same team.
No, that's right. And then Jack went and managed Ireland, which was an eventful time.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Bobby Charlton, I mean, it's so difficult to know exactly what to say. Obviously, he was involved in the Munich air disaster in 1958. Mm-hmm. And then again, it is like a Hollywood script where he goes through that tremendous tragedy that really he carried with him for the rest of his life. A little bit like Dalgleish kind of being the figurehead at Liverpool during Hillsborough and how that affected him. For the years afterwards, it's very similar with Bobby Charlton's story.
Yeah.
And then 10 years later, to lift the European Cup, the first English side, I think the Lisbon Lions had done it a few years earlier, hadn't they? Celtic
did it.
As a British team, but the first English team to win the European Cup, 10 years later exactly, wasn't it? 1968.
Well, I mean, we've covered it, haven't we, in one of our European podcasts, but the story is unbelievable in terms of, like, you know, Busby was injured but carried on managing, rebuilt the team, basically used up every ounce of physical energy he had left to take them to the 68. They won the league twice in the 60s, but they got to the 68 European Cup final. George Best and Brian Keard, Bobby Charlton, obviously, you know, a great team, and they beat the cursed Benfica.
That's right, yeah.
And it's quite an iconic, you might not have seen it, if maybe you've not come across it before, but it's quite an iconic night. And then the celebrations, Charlton scores twice on the night, two brilliant goals, actually. The second one, one of those finishes where you're like, you kind of watch it and you lose where the ball has gone with the camera angle.
Yeah, I think a couple of people like retweeted new footage that's emerged of that second goal,
right,
which gives it like the kind of...
It's a brilliant little flip.
Yeah, angle you need. It's so good.
For a guy that like thunder twatted,
it's
a lovely...
He still had the deafness.
A lovely touch, I mean, talking of his thunder twatting, like that was kind of what he was known for, which we've talked about with the ball, but he... It was largely credited with kicking off the 66 World Cup good time feel.
Yeah, yeah.
Those of you who don't know the 66 World Cup, England drew the first game 0-0, and it was very similar to Euro 96, if that was more your generation, where England just couldn't get going at home.
Stuttered, flat to deceive.
And it was a Charlton's goal against, I want to say, Mexico. breaking through from midfield, drops the shoulder, goes onto his right and absolutely smashes it in from 25 yards. And Wembley erupts.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant goal. And it just lit England up in terms of in that tournament. And I think, you know, the Big Mo joined the coaching staff after that.
Yeah.
Because I think that they weren't unstoppable, but they, you know, there was an element where people felt England could win it.
Yeah, of course.
After that point.
Yeah, he basically, before there were the, well, I guess it's our generation's kind of Gerrard's Rooney's grab the game by the scruff of the neck.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
Like almost a force of character, isn't it? A force of will that you just exert on the pitch.
Yeah.
Maybe Jude Bellingham will get to that level. Yeah, who knows? Jude. He could be the next Sir Jude Bellingham. I don't know why, but he's got such a name. I feel like he should be Sir Jude of Bellingham. Do you know what I mean? Like just some kind of landed gentry knight that's come to save England. But talking about saving England, obviously, like you say, he is the crown in the jewel of our 1966 World Cup win. But then
before we move on to 66, there's a couple of moments with Charlton that personified him and the way that he was as a footballer, but also as a person. In the semi-final, we came up against Eusebio, who's, you know, best striker in the world at that point. And, you know, that was a dangerous game. Eusebio scored in it, but Charlton scored twice and kind of ran the show for England to qualify for the final. And then in the final, Alf Ramsey, and this is interesting, you were saying about Nobby Stiles.
Yeah.
Alf Ramsey asked Bobby Charlton to mark Franz Beckenbauer, who was the best player for Germany at that time, not Nobby Stiles, who probably would have been better suited for a man-marking job. So they kind of sacrificed Charlton, and he sacrificed himself largely in that game.
In order to stop
Beckenbauer.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I'd never thought about that, the fact that, it should be Stiles that is marking Beckenbauer.
But I think Ramsey probably thought, to stop someone as good as Beckenbauer, it needs to be the best player we've got.
That's really interesting. Yeah. What a compliment as well.
Yeah.
And again, it speaks to the man's class that he's, like you say, willing to...
Just did the job.
Yeah. Willing to do the dirty work rather than try and grab the headlines or incredible stuff.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
A small story about what happened in 1966 when my team, England, had reached the World Cup final. And our manager, before every match, always used to say this to who he thought were the important players, the instructions that he wanted them to carry out. And it was probably the most important football match in my whole career. I've dreamt about it. And he said to me, Bobby, he says, we will win the World Cup this afternoon. There is only one person who can possibly stop us from doing that. He said, and that is this young player, the midfield player who plays for West Germany. And he said, I want you for the whole 90 minutes to stay with him and don't go further than 3 feet away from him for the whole time. And as a footballer, I've been looking forward so much to this, I didn't really want to man mark. But what I heard later was that Helmut Schön, the German manager, had told Franz Beckenbauer the same thing about me. So much so that one of the most important matches in either of our careers was a man-to-man marking job where we had to take, and we actually took no part at all of importance in the whole game. I suppose England were the successful ones because that's justified in the result.
You look at his kind of honours, so you see that the home championship, when it used to be a thing in the 50s, 60s, and I think even into the 70s, where it would be all the, obviously, the home nations battling against each other. So he won that, I think, 5 times out of the 10 that he played. Yeah. So not a bad record. Finished third in the 68 Euro Championships. Obviously won the World Cup with England 66. Won 3 top flights with Man United. He won the FA Cup and was runner-up twice. He won the Charity Shield, which, even for you, Sir Bobby, I'm sure you wouldn't have counted it. Come on. We'll give it. It's like the Scouts badge, isn't it? It's like, well done. You got your FA Charity
Shield.
It's
lower than the Carabao Cup, isn't it?
It is, really. And then obviously the European Cup victory in 68. Now here's a little pop quiz for you, Ad, not being a Man United fan, but he is voted as fourth, which surprised me. He's the fourth greatest Man United player of all time. Voted by the fans, which really surprised me. Who are the three above him?
I mean, when that vote was taken, I'm guessing it's going to dictate that a little bit.
I very much think so with the three that got above him.
I'd like to think George Best is in there.
Correct.
And then you're probably talking Cantona.
Correct. Come on, Addy.
Brian Robson?
No.
I mean, it could be a number of them now.
It could be. He's not really spoken about anymore because he got himself in a bit of hot water with his...
Oh, Keith Gillespie.
That was really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's funnier than it should have been. the greatest player in United history. Sorry, so, he got himself in trouble. What?
Just in his personal life. So it was the Welshman.
Oh, Giggs.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Giggsy. Sorry. I started thinking about Robbie Savage.
Bloody hell.
Well, it's the Gillespie thing that that threw you, didn't it?
I was thinking on the wrong plane then. Yeah.
But yeah, so he does come in fourth in the fans' vote. But I think.
So who was top? Giggs?
Oh, let me
surely
find out the
not,
order.
Man. I like that.
Ryan Giggs, who topped the poll.
Bloody hell. That was taken in the 90s.
Eric Cantona and then George Best. So
Cantona only played for 5 years.
Ridiculous, right? I'm clicking on the link. It was cited in 2011. This vote was,
and he missed half a season for kicking a.
Yeah, well, maybe that's what endeared him. We're like a guy that can do mixed martial arts as well as kick a football. Yeah. Is Giggs really? I suppose,
but it's not going to be voted for by people that are online every day.
No,
as in
true.
The older generation not going to be online like the younger.
Yeah,
generation.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. The way it skews towards a younger audience because of
it was a phone vote.
Yeah, by mail, yeah. Please enclose your £2 as you send it to this PO box. Thank you very much.
I like it.
There was a really, I know we're kind of going scattershot across this whole career, but there is a really, talking about what you said about him and Jack and that kind of familial backstory, there's an amazing photo that's been doing the rounds of a really young Jack Charlton with a massive leather football being thrown up in the air, and they're in the terraces, clearly of... Is he born in Manchester?
No, Ashington.
Ah, right.
In Northeast.
That's a great pull. How did you know that?
I read it yesterday, but I also know this is a cricket nerd. It's where Mark Wood, the England cricket bowler, is from.
Oh,
so
interesting.
So it's literally the same town. So I was like, oh, that's weird that they're literally from the same town.
Oh, very good. Look at that ad.
Nothing to do with anything other than the fact I was like, oh, weird that I know where Mark Wood's from.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll remove your camera from the house opposite very shortly.
Very strange.
But there's this amazing photo where the ball's being thrown up and he's challenging his mum.
Yeah, I've seen
in
that.
The
yeah,
air.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
absolutely astonishing, but she looks like she's given it a roll as well. It is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
I'm like, what a, like, and they're both kind of, I don't know, just that one picture seems to encapsulate this kind of family fun with a competitive edge. Like,
it's that era,
saying no.
It's that era, isn't it? Like the street. The kids that were brought up in, you know, playing in the streets.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't about what facilities they had available. They just got a ball and played out, you know, on the concrete or wherever it might be. I mean, if Bobby Charlton did Bobby Charlton's street soccer, it would have been a very different series.
Yes, it would. Right, here's how you absolutely bullet the ball into someone's
absolute
window.
Absolute tickers.
Some tickers are good. Some tickers are bad.
Some tickers.
The guys are coming with unbelievable tickers.
Unbelievable tickers.
He's pitching Bobby Charlton. What the fuck are you doing?
Just give me the ball. Whack. Have it. It's much more John Smith than it is Wayne Rooney's street striker.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
As we said, he became a statesman for the game as well, so he was massively involved in the bids for us to get various Olympic Games, Commonwealth Games, the 2012 Summer Olympics he was a massive part of. He got inducted into every Hall of Fame possible. Also did a hell of a lot of charity work, especially with landmines, which I didn't realise.
Oh, really?
He used to travel the world helping to protest against the use of landmines, help to get them removed.
That.
No, but again, he's not the kind of guy that
don't shout about it.
No,
yeah.
I'm
yeah.
sure he used his influence, but it was never about bringing like more attention to his name.
Yeah.
He just did what he had to do and what he believed was right, which was amazing.
Yeah.
He has a football pitch in St. George's National Football Centre, so the England's kind of hub of excellence, named after him. But it was revealed 3 years ago that Charlton was first diagnosed with dementia, and that's when he started to kind of retire from public life, kind of around-ish COVID time as well. It seemed to coincide with, obviously, people not being allowed to the games. And I'm almost certain that his final appearance for a United game, I think, was just pre-COVID. He might try and think if he went to the Newcastle FA League Cup final or not.
It would have made sense, wouldn't it? I think certainly older folk around COVID time were much more kind of wary of being out in public and stuff. So even if it wasn't about COVID, it was like it's easier, safer to not be putting yourself in a stadium with 80,000 people.
Yeah, exactly.
However many Old Trafford takes.
So the only other thing that I really have to mention is that I didn't realise this. He's actually portrayed in a movie by actor Jack O'Connell. So there's a movie called United. This was in 2011 as well, that focused on the Busby Babes and what happened in the Munich air crash.
Right.
And Charlton was portrayed by actor Jack O'Connell. So he's one of the few kind of real life footballers, other than those that were in the damned United, that actually have kind of been imitated on the screen. Because most of the time it's a footballer playing themselves. You get Ozzy Ardiles in Escape to Victory or Pele in Escape to Victory.
I was trying to work out why Bobby Charlton wouldn't Escape to Victory. But
that's right. Alan Shearer in the Goal series. Not quite as heady.
No, no.
But I thought that was interesting. So if you are interested in
something
in imitation, is Jack O'Connell in the film United? Never seen the film. It might be terrible.
I mean, most football films are terrible, aren't
they? It is probably absolutely dreadful. So we obviously speak about him being a United legend quite rightly. I thought he was a United man for his entire career, but there were five other teams he represented.
Play or manager?
As a player. Which, it's very much a...
Post-United.
Really? Yeah, so he plays one...
Didn't he play a manager, Preston?
Very good, Ad. Look at that. Yeah, so he leaves United in 73, and then for the 74-75 season, still plays 38 games for Preston.
Of course he does. All right, Glenn.
Just untipping his tracksuit, step aside, lads. You can imagine it was just like... And that was in the third division as well, so you can just...
I mean, even at the end of his career. I would take that.
Imagine
it's
that.
It's only 3 years past the 1970 World Cup. Yeah. I'd be like, you're playing, Bob. Yeah. Definitely.
Imagine getting to be one of those players as well. Third division, yeah. And Bobby Charlton steps onto your pitch. It's like, right, thank you. After that, he went over to Ireland just for three games for Waterford United. After that, he spent seasons in basically NASL. So we had
I was going to ask if he went to America.
Yeah,
so any memory of that?
He goes to Blacktown City, Newcastle United, but not the Newcastle right. United. And then he also spends a season in Perth. Only three appearances, two goals.
Perth in Australia.
That's right, yeah. Right. So he clearly just went, I'm guessing, for ambassadorial roles, because I'm looking at the stats now and it's basically like three appearances. So he was there for the year, but I don't really
know. Was
that
around the same time Pele and Beckenbauer and all that?
I'm trying to think.
You would have thought that was kind of like... 80. Yeah, it feels like that's going to be similarish.
Yeah, is it a bit late?
A bit late for Pele, maybe? Pele.
Yeah, but I'm sure Sam Allardyce was over there. He loved it in the United States in the 80s. And we'll just leave that one hanging.
That's where he played his trade.
But yeah, so I think that's really all we've got to say, unless you have anything particularly extra for...
No, I mean, the only thing I got to add, just because I spoke to my dad yesterday, and my dad's in his 70s, and we were talking about Bobby Charlton, and I just said to him, like, what do you remember? And my dad was born and bred in Exeter, and he said the most exciting day that he can remember growing up was when Exeter drew United in the FA Cup. And he was just telling, it's a story of anybody, really, but just, you know, this massive team, Best, Law, Charlton, coming to town, and tickets... wasn't like back then, but you know, now, like Ticketmaster, it was like, can you get your hands on one? And him and his mates from school managed to get their hands on tickets to all standing, all terraced. They call it the Cowshed, this massive stand in Exeter's ground. And Man United turned up, and he said it was just the most unbelievable, surreal experience of his life.
Especially because TV wasn't really a thing. It's not like you'd watched your heroes week in, week out. It was, for some people, literally a once in a lifetime to see people in the flesh.
You said you just didn't, you can remember it even now, and you know, what was it, 50, 60 years since that day?
Yeah.
And Exeter somehow managed to get a draw. And then got dicked
at the replay.
But he just said the power of that kind of. I mean, he kind of said Charlton, Best, Law, those guys. Mm-hmm. When they walked onto the pitch, it was like a, you know, almost an awe came across the ground. Yeah. And I think that's just the power of that kind of stature of that kind of player.
Yeah,
I think that's what it said to me when he was telling the story. Just amazing player, amazing human being by the sounds of it, which is refreshing. In this day and age of scandal and dark secrets and all the rest of it.
It is. And I think the thing that we can actually look forward to in the next few days is all the continuing footage and stories that get to be brought up, where people that, like you say, like your dad, that have these kind of anecdotal stories, or people that actually met him. And that's what I always love about somebody that's beloved when they actually do pass away, is the stories where like, oh, they are everything I thought they were.
Yeah.
And like you say, that's refreshing, because it's always the way.
There's always a sadness with that, isn't there? Because it's lovely.
You want them to
have
seen it.
You want to have them. It's just weird, isn't it?
Yeah, like,
of course. You know, he probably knew, and he probably would have hated it.
Yeah. That's what's interesting.
in the humility of it all. But so it is a lovely thing to have that.
Well, on that note, I think we'll call it there. But Sir Bobby Charlton, how we hardly knew you, despite the fact that you're around for all of our lives. But I'm sure you're resting in peace, and we thank you for everything that you brought us over the years.